From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. We are kicking off our last politics as usual for 2012 with a look at the latest headlines. Joining me in Studio 3 are Marvin Vinay, Executive Director of the Black and Latino Democratic Legislative Caucus, Michael Goldman, Senior Consultant for the Government Insight Group, and Aaron O'Brien, a Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston. Welcome back, everybody.
It's good to be here.
Good to be here.
Well, the big topic continues to be the big topic, which is the non-agreement on the fiscal cliff. I said to my producer weeks ago when we were thinking about what we talk about today, I said, well, there's probably a good chance we'll be talking about the after impact of what has been passed. Ha ha. So here we are with nothing, and it's really scary. And it doesn't appear that there's any movement right now. Michael Goldman.
Yeah, I'm not scared at all. I personally think the best thing that could happen is for there to be no agreement. I really do. I think that one of the great myths that the Republicans have been able to play on the American public has been this idea that austerity is the way to go forward. And even to some degree, the Democrats and Obama have bought that. And I totally disagree with that. I think you grow your way out of this with more jobs and more spending. I think that what this cut really means is the public's going to see the world without the breaks they get from government. And I want them to know that when they get their taxes that they think are so high, they'd be a heck of a lot higher if it wasn't for the things that government does to give them certain tax breaks. And you know, again, I don't like a government that's austere, and hopefully people will say this isn't the government we want. We want our old government. And so I'm not that worried about it.
Well, Aaron O'Brien, austerity is about what we're going to get. And remember, this plan was put in, this sequestration was put in as the poison pill to make Congress act. This was supposed to give people lots of incentive not to let this happen, but it's happening.
You know, I'm a professor, and it's like they gave themselves a group project, and they can't do the group project. It's absurd. Like, if any of us ran our business, if any of us worked like this, you know, it just wouldn't work. And so the American people are angry, and I think they are angry, and I would agree with Michael to a point, but I think the Democrats need this. You're right. It was the poison pill. This was the only way this would force them to get something done. But I think the Democrats need this to get done in order to do gun control and in order to do immigration. It's simply the case that for many Republican members of Congress, not doing anything is politically efficacious for them. Their districts will reward them. And it's the Democrats, especially the White House, that needs this done to allow for that second term agenda to really move forward.
Well, let me be clear. It sounds as though you're saying that if doesn't happen and it doesn't look like it's going to happen, it's politically advantageous for the Democrats.
No, I actually think it's problematic. Now, I do understand Michael's point. People would start to realize, oh, my gosh, my check went down. Look what government does for me. I like that in a long term, what government does for me, the political efficacy of government. But in the short term, I think the Democrats lose. I think the Democrats, especially the White House, loses because it'll be about this fiscal cliff and then it'll be about the debt ceiling. And that takes up a heck of a lot of agenda space. And that's agenda space that can't be used or would be swallowed up so that immigration and gun control don't get the treatment that they really deserve and which the Democrats really want to focus on.
So, Marvin Vinay, let's talk about the politics of this, because on Sunday, President Barack Obama went on a Sunday talk show. He doesn't typically do that to make the case that the Republicans were blocking all of this progress or any potential progress. He says they have had trouble saying yes. Of course, House Speaker John Boehner came back and said it's the president who has never been able to get to yes. So here we are politically from your observation. Who wins if this goes down and it looks like it's going down in flames?
I actually think that this actually looks good for the president. I think that Speaker Boehner has continuously tried to fight this, the negotiations, and has not allowed for there to be anything of a compromise to even take place. He's not been able to even secure enough votes for from his own party. So, you know, the fact that he can't secure votes from his own party and it looks as if he is the stalemate here, you know, we're really looking to the Democrats to change things. I think with Senator Mitch McConnell and a vice president now in negotiations. We've seen some sort of movement in the last, I want to say, 6 hours. We've now gotten to a point where I think we're looking at those who are above $450,000 in income will now be taxed at a higher bracket. And so that is not what the president actually, you know, campaigned on. However, you're seeing some sort of movement that is existing, and I think that Boehner is going to be put in a position where he's going to have to vote. He's going to have to put it on the floor, which he said he would do if it passed in the Senate. He would bring it to the floor.
See, but here's the thing. It's interesting what Aaron and
Michael Goldman
was talking about it, and sort of the opposite view that that Marvin mentioned. I think what we have here, and the president sort of alluded to it, and I was surprised and pleased that he did. These guys have this pathological hatred of the president.
Absolutely,
they don't want to accept the results of this election. They're unwilling to admit, even though they continue to control the House, that the Democrats got more votes for their members than they did, even though they were able to cherry pick the seats. And this is a continuation, and I think we'll all agree on this. I mean, if you take a look at this past year, put aside the judicial appointments that continue to be stalled while the judiciary backs up. Horrible, you know. Mm-hmm. You've got campaign finance transparency, they said no to that. The Buffett rule, they said no to that, the Republicans. The Employment Non-Discrimination Act that would finally take all gender, all race, all sexual preference off the table, they said no to that. The UN treaty that Bob Dole went in to the and
Republican
begged for,
Bob Dole.
Republican presidential, icon, and they couldn't get that passed. This is just another piece of that. It's a giant piece, but it's, if you vote for him, we're going to show you that there will be no government. We can basically starve it.
But it's
an institutional problem.
Right.
And so
exactly.
Congress is set up this way that they get rewarded for doing it. They're going to get reelected. They've been reelected. So we have this institutional.
But what is the progress? There's very limited progress taking
exactly.
place.
Exactly. Or at least those Tea Party Republicans benefit from the lack of progress.
Just a quote from this Politico piece, which speaks to what you've raised and I think gets to what everybody's saying here. The piece says, in the staunchly conservative districts that most House Republicans inhabit, playing ball with President Barack Obama on taxes and the debt means tempting a primary opponent in the next election. The threat of a challenge from the left that might come from digging in, on the other hand, is almost non-existent for most members.
Right.
As a matter of pure political self-interest, the post-election debate within the GOP about how to broaden the party's appeal and avoid another Romney-esque debacle in 4 years is irrelevant in this quarter of GOP politics.
See, and I would add to that. I think that's absolutely accurate. I would also add to it, when you take a look at Delaware, is a great example. You've got a candidate, Mike Castle, a Republican, and I'm pretty liberal, but I could live with Mike Castle. He's a progressive, a moderate to progressive on certain issues that I think are important. He's too conservative fiscally for me, but I can live with that. Joe Biden, the Vice President of the United States, who served as senator, his son, who was an elected official, wouldn't run against him. And he never got out of the Republican primary. The Democrats own that seat because they, you've just articulated it, Callie. They put in someone who is literally unacceptable to massive sway. And you can see it again and again and again and again this last cycle. The Democrats should not be in charge of the Senate right now. They are because of what the Republicans gave us. This is another piece of the pie.
I think that if you go back to Aaron's point, that the Republicans are they're broken. In a lot of ways, they're unclear on which direction they want to go in. You know, you have the speaker going in one direction. You have Mitch McConnell going in a different direction. And no one has figured out what can be passed by all of their membership. And this is the reason why we're sitting here, because there's too many ideas of where we should be. And they've not went into a caucus and sat down and made a conclusion on what direction they really want to go in.
And I would just add to that, to the quote that Kelly read, what's good for the individual member of Congress, the individual Tea Party Republican
Correct.
Member of Congress, the ones where we don't really know their name. Right. They're lower on the totem pole and stuff like that.
They're getting a name now, though.
And what's good for them is not good for the institution, nor is it good for the country.
And I just add the one point. I think that the listenership here in this area really doesn't understand yet is that while anyone with any political, to use an old Yiddish phrase, sechel, which is like brains, would take a look and say, oh, my God, the reason that Mitt Romney lost is because he went too far to the right in the primary process, as did John McCain. And when they tried to get back to the center, it was too late in the election. I was in Washington, and I can tell you there are people in D.C., Republicans in D.C., who say, you guys are crazy. The reason we lost is because instead of taking true conservatives like Santorum or Kaine or Gingrich, we went back to the center again. What we have to do is we have to stay to the far right. Now, there's no political data, none, which will say that works. They believe it, and this is part of that.
Well, it's ideological purity, or is it do you negotiate? In many of those individual districts, negotiation means you lose. And until we change that, it's like we keep on getting more superstorms. We keep on getting more superstorms of nothing in Congress.
I am not displeased with their negotiations.
let me just put a button on this discussion and ask this question. The public didn't know that what was on the table or what had been fought over in the back rooms was the Social Security benefit adjustments.
Correct.
That came out yesterday.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so, listen, people, that is huge for the Republicans to put forward and say.
But it's pulled off.
And pulled back.
I know, but that's my point. So the fact that it ever got there is a huge movement. And now that is not acceptable
even for that. I think it was a ploy. I think it was a ploy.
You are so conspiracist.
I think it was a ploy. I think the Republicans were very clear that this would not move.
But the whole deal would not move, so they just put it up there.
So they put it out there with just the hopes of saying, hey, guess what? Let's just put it out there. We know where it's going to end up.
We tried
it. It looks good. We can go back and say we made some sort of concerted
effort. But McCain and Kay Bailey Hutchinson, to that point, came out and said, we're going to pull it, not because we don't want it. They want it desperately, but it looks bad right now. McCain, I forget his direct quote, but it's tax breaks for really rich people versus Social Security for seniors. Mm-hmm. That's not a binary they're ever going to win. And so I think they pulled it off for that reason.
Now, again, I would just end with one thought, and that is we went this year in Massachusetts from 10 congressmen to 9 congressmen. What that means is that each of those congressmen picked up one part of Barney Frank's whole district because you squeezed the 10 into 9.
Right.
The House leadership under the Republicans did not give the Democrats who were here the additional money that Barney got. So what you've got now is 9 people doing the work of 10 with the money of 9. And it's, again, another small grain of sand in how do we starve government? How do we make it?
But it speaks to
if government doesn't function well, if the congressman can't return my call, if he doesn't have the appropriate staff, people will hate government more and people will be opposed to it. And that's a philosophy, as you know, Erin. Mm-hmm. In a very,
and it speaks to redistricting, the importance of redistricting, that in the individual states, the districts have been drawn to be more ideological. And that means members are sent that are more ideological, which leaves us in this really ugly place at the end of 2012.
Well, I want to move on to another subject, but not before I make this note that I think a lot of people may not know. In the last couple of days, while people are wrangling and fighting about this fiscal cliff, President Obama signed a bill for a pay raise for Vice President Biden and the members of Congress, the do-nothing Congress we're speaking of right now, that could not get
God
this
bless
deal
them,
done.
Each and every one.
It's not a lot. But
why
do
Americans hate government?
What percentage?
Okay, so the federal, just to be clear, the federal employees haven't had a raise in a long, long time, since 2009. So, I mean, come on.
Well, but the good news is social worker gets nothing. So
I just want to put on the table that see some of that money that you're concerned that they lost and the return they have now picked up in their salary. Michael Goldman. I am speaking with Michael Goldman, a senior consultant for the Government Insight Group, Marvin Vinay, executive director of the Black and Latino Democratic Legislative Caucus, and Erin O'Brien, a professor of political science at UMass Boston. All right. Hillary Clinton is in the headlines for her health.
Yeah.
She's hospitalized with a blood clot. Which people are saying is not uncommon. I listened to Sanjay Gupta of CNN this morning. He worked for her at one time, says she'd had it before. And so that doesn't make it great, but and he ascertained that the coagulants that they are using to disperse this blood clot means it's perhaps not on the brain and other places in her body.
Right.
And as we know, you can have that deep vein thrombosis if you fly a lot. And this is the flyingest woman on the face of the earth.
So, million miles.
Yeah. So there you have it. I just wonder if this will dispel, because we're here talking about politics as usual in this segment, the somewhat conspiracist comments made that she used her concussion, because it was the concussion that led her to be not able to testify in the Benghazi hearing a week or so ago, that this will put this to rest. Will that go away?
It should, but it won't. Last night I made the mistake of going on Twitter, and many people were retweeting a lot of conservatives and conservative columnists who had been forwarding this idea that she faked it to avoid testifying in Benghazi. And I think this is the update of Whitewater for her. It should empirically, like, the woman has medical issues. But once all it takes is a seed of this to grow, you know, if you're willing to say Obama wasn't born in the United States, it's not a stretch to say she's that this on the far, far right. And I mean far, far right, that this is also faking.
I would suggest two things. First of all, I didn't know how we were going to do today, so I put down as my villain of the year John Bolton, who, of course, started this whole thing, one of the most despicable people ever to serve in government.
Send the email to Michael
Goldman. Former, he was the guy who's the former UN ambassador who said this is all a fraud. But Aaron could not be more right. There's a great book that came out 3 or 4 years ago by my old friend Charlie Pierce, who you know well, called Idiot America. And in there, his whole premise is about the whole nature of these conspiracy theories going back as part of American history and it's part of our nature to just suspect everything. And what Aaron said is correct, exactly correct. A, of course it should, and B, of course it won't.
Okay.
There you go.
I just thought I'd put it on the table. Marvin Vinay, despite all that, recent poll before it was announced that she had to be hospitalized for this blood clot, that she tops every possible candidate if she were to run in 2016. Are you surprised by that?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Hillary Clinton, who has, who ran a combative yet successful campaign for president despite the ending result. She still had a hell of a campaign. But then she went on to become Secretary of the State, and she has done a phenomenal job. I mean, everyone's wanted her to run for president. They wanted her to run before. They did not expect that President Obama would win the way that he did. It, for all intents and purposes, everyone thought she was going to be the president these last 8 years. So I'm not surprised, but I will say that if pending her health and other things coming up, she could not become that nominee.
85% of Democrats and independents who lean toward the Democratic Party in this CNN international poll said they'd be very or somewhat likely to support Clinton if she runs for the Democratic nomination. And all the other people just fall to the wayside. Of course, she's not said she would. In fact, she said she's not interested, but everybody keeps thinking that's a wink, wink. What do you think, Aaron?
You know, I think she's definitely interested. I just think the polls, and it also just came out, she's the most admired woman in the country for like 17 out of 20 years.
Right.
I think she's very well positioned. I also think it's 4 years. No, as Marvin said, no one thought of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm. She's in the lead right now, and a lot of people would love to see her. She, a lot of progressives who really didn't like her the first go around have come around to her. Moderates who used to have issues with her, both on the left and the right. Her tenure as Secretary of State has been very effective by almost every measure. So she's very well positioned. I just think 4 years is a long time.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's move on to gun control legislation, which is going to be introduced this week by Dianne Feinstein. Some people have said to her, don't do it. She said, gotta do it. The president has said, if not now, when? And he appointed Joe Biden, the vice president, to head up really his second time around in going for gun control. So, Marvin, does this have a shot?
Actually, I think it does. I think that if we are able to get through this fiscal cliff successfully.
Where that's a big if, Marvin.
But I think it's still feasible. The hour's late, but as we know, when kids go to the playground and they have their disputes, it's by the end of the night that everything works out. So I think that we will find ourselves in a position where there will be some compromise tonight at the 11th hour. And I think that it will lead into what Aaron's indicated earlier, that we will find some resolution with gun control. There are a number. The challenge that we're going to have with the gun control is the fact that David King, the NRA president, and Joe Biden are not friends at all. And there's no negotiation and no conversation that exists amongst the two of them. And so that group is going to fight tooth and nail to see anything pass.
The NRA.
The NRA, that is. Yeah. And so I think that we will find some resolution, specifically if we're looking at the recent incidents that have occurred in America. We have to find some compromise on gun control in order to make the American people feel safe and also to avoid our school systems being guarded by armed guards,
which is the proposal by the National Rifle Association, Michael Goldman. And they said, you know, if a good guy has a gun, then those a lot of those kids wouldn't be dead today. Of course, what we have heard now from Dianne Feinstein and others is pointing out that there were armed guards at the school where the Columbine killers were, and it did not make a
I just want to add one point. The interesting thing here is that if you think about the fact that this the guns that were used in this incident were guns given to a parent who fit the bill for what you would call as a qualified gun buyer. And so the student or the child was never the intendee for the gun. So as although we're going to change these laws and so forth, you know, change the regulations, we still have to take in consideration that the mental health of the buyer is not always the one involved in the in the matter at hand. And we have to figure out how to broaden this out to an to a household concern, or you know, to factor in some other key areas, because this interest is just not going to be singled out to the buyer. The buyer can always be and can be sane, can be you know, the best at everything, and someone who has access to their weaponry ends up utilizing it, and here we are with a situation
well,
like this.
You don't only have that. You know, the rates of suicides, guns in the home, the fact is you're more likely to be killed by a gun if you have a gun in the house than if you don't. The statistic that absolutely floored me, because it includes my entire life, if you take a look at Bobby Kennedy's death in 1968 and you look at all the people who have been killed by guns in America since then, it's more than have been killed in every American war in the history of the United States of America. It's a stunning statistic that in the we've all lived through a period of massive carnage, and we don't even see it or feel it.
Chicago,
you
just
forget
hit
some of them.
No, I mean, I think it's going to come out. So,
well, this is a focusing event in political science. You know, we've had so many of these. I'm ashamed to say, and I don't think I'm alone in this, that when I'm going through all the tragedies, I'm like, oh, I forgot about that one in Milwaukee, or I forgot about that one. That is unconscionable, and this is a focusing event that throws off normal time politics. So I'm with Marvin on this, that I think that. Strike while the iron's hot here, because 20 kids, there's nobody more deserving than 20 first graders.
Okay, I'm moving
and
on.
And I think it'll change it.
Okay, I got to get on to, because stuff is happening in Massachusetts. My goodness. So now when John Kerry is sworn in, and we expect that to happen soon as the next Secretary of State, the clock starts ticking toward the special election to replace him. And John Kerry has come out in support of Ed Markey. I got to say, Marvin, I'm turning to you on this, because I think you would say that's a gangster move. That's blocking everybody, is it
you
not?
You are absolutely right. And you hit the nail on the coffin. John Kerry has already indicated he wants Markey, and by God Almighty, the money's going to flood to Markey. And if you look at the other contestants that we're looking at as potentials, if we're looking at Congressman Lynch, we're looking at Congressman Capuano, none of them will be able to not only raise the capital, but also raise the flair necessary to back to challenge a Markey when you have an endorsement like John Kerry. Because you're not just talking about John Kerry now. You're talking about John Kerry and everything that comes with John Kerry. John Kerry has moved races across this state since he's been in office, and he's moved them across the country. By God, if you're telling me that John Kerry has said Ed Markey wants Ed Markey to have the seat, And Markey, congratulations. You are our next U.S. Senator.
Yes, yeah, but he didn't endorse him, Michael Goldman.
He didn't endorse him. Yeah. And I would say the person who I would want, if you said to me you had one person to go with you at the outset of a race, it would not be John Kerry. It would be Mayor Menino. Mm. That's number one. Number two, you know, I think it was
Mayor Menino would be U.S. Senator?
No, as the person who endorses that matters.
I don't think
John Kerry brings you money, but no field. He doesn't. That's not his particular strength. It was a very brilliant move on the part of Markey politically. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any question about that.
We can't disagree with that.
Interestingly enough, his wife, Markey's wife, is very close to both Vicky Kennedy and to Terry.
And Vicky Kennedy came right out and said, no, I'm not running.
She endorsed Markey.
And by the way, But we haven't seen any polling yet. And I think when the polling comes out, you're going to see that Eddie Markey isn't known by a hell of a lot of people.
Right.
And a guy like Michael Capuano and even Lynch, who have Boston, is. And this is a very tiny turnout election.
Look at our numbers from the last race. Capuano's numbers from the last race.
Yeah. What?
He didn't make the mark.
But he won everything that matters. But he
Markey's never lost by he's always gotten 62%.
Markey's smart enough with to get into a race. And I'm not supporting him.
Aaron, here you want to hear your voice on this. What?
Well, and I think it'll clear the primary. I mean, the real question here is, can Brown win? Like, that's the real question, I think. And I think we have to look. And
you think
this
they're
going to
invest enough more money?
No, I just think if he runs, he's the best guy to run, sure. Structurally, this isn't 2010. Democrats aren't going to be surprised. The endorsement of Kerry for Markey, mm-hmm. in all likelihood will clear the primary. Democrats aren't going to be surprised this time around. Markey will be a good candidate that gets establishment Democrats in Massachusetts and the progressives, because he's got some real credentials there. And Obama will be working on gun control and immigration. So you've got a popular president. And so I think the real question for most political watchers are interested in what Brown does. I think Markey can beat him. I think Stephen Lynch is Scott Brown, by and large. They vote the same. So I don't think that's a good choice. But I think the field's been cleared pretty nicely for Markey.
Well, again, I want to go back and make a couple of points here. I've known Eddie Markey my entire life. He comes from my hometown. I knew him during his first race for Congress. I knew him when he ran for state rep in 1966. So I have no animus to Ed Markey at all.
But I
think that if he turns out to be the candidate, he will beat Scott Brown. Mm. That said, I think that the political establishment, which tries to clear a field, does itself a disservice sometimes. You make the point of saying Eddie Markey got 62%. Markey's running 10% of the state. Mm-hmm. Capuano's run statewide. It gives him an advantage, just like the Hillary numbers, number one. Number two, the first time he ran...
We're in a new era.
When was the last time he had a race? He's been in there for close to 40 years, and he hasn't had a campaign since the first one.
I don't disagree with you.
I'm going to go over here with Michael Goldman and say, Michael Capuano's reputation is all about man of the people.
Unfortunately, man of the people falls in a certain arena.
It doesn't carry over
everywhere.
And the Democrats don't have a sexy candidate. Republicans do right now.
Oh, okay, that's the bottom
line.
Right, and if we can say in conclusion, the Mass GOP chairmanship is up in the air in weirdness. I just want to put on the table that we have tried to get every single one of those candidates in here to talk to the people about who they are and what they would want to do, and none of them will answer
funny.
Us. Good luck. I think that's
weird. I went on their websites.
I did too, but this was the saddest day for me this year, really.
I mean, you know, the president said Columbine. It was the day when the Republican state chair resigned because he had done such a great job for the Democrats in this last cycle. I mean, he was just horrific.
Are you being...
yes, I am. I mean, there is no Republican Party. You know, I will again use my favorite quote, which is, there are three things you can depend on every year, and that is Punxsutawney Phil will show his face, and the Birds will trade to Capistrano, and the Boston Globe will do a front page story that says this is the year the Republicans are going to finally win something. They were killed.
Do not speak to the people.
Democratic strategist Michael Goldman. Let me move over to Aaron O'Brien, political policy professor, and say this. This seems to me an opportunity for somebody.
I agree.
This is a complete clean slate. Mm-hmm. Everybody believes that, like Michael Coleman does. Mm-hmm. And someone could come in and take this thing by the hand and say, we are the Massachusetts GOP. We're leading New England, by the way.
The overconfidence is what got the Democrats in trouble in 2010. And so as a political analyst, I would say be careful there. Now, whoever it is, and I think it'll be Kirsten Hughes because she has the Scott Brown backing, and Republicans in Massachusetts love Scott Brown because they finally had somebody. And that felt good for a while. But whoever does it has a real challenge to get the moderates from Boston. My family's from Western Mass. I know Western Mass pretty well. Those are much more hardcore conservatives. And so I do think it's a real opportunity here. And I did go on those websites. They've been really smart about saying, we're going to start down ballot race. We want to get, this is curious, we want to get from 11% registration to 15% registration. Because the way you win elections is get a pipeline going. So get some people in those lower races and start building your victories. It doesn't statewide Republicans aren't expecting another senator. They are expecting some more wins.
Aaron, but I know you weren't here for this, but there was a period of time, and Callie will remember, and Marvin, you will too, that the Republican, yes, she will. Weld never did anything to build a party. Mm. It was actually Mitt Romney, when he still briefly was the governor, and he ran the mini-Mitts, we called them, the 133 Republicans that they funded and ran against Democrats in the House and the Senate. They lost 133 out of 133 races.
But I'm talking
That's when Mitt Romney walked away.
I want city mayors.
I think it's a whole new day, Michael.
I think we're in a new
even
era.
I really do. Even with this big defeat, I think, go ahead, Marvin, I think it's a new day.
I think we're in a new era. we're in a new era now where a candidate has a different outlook on how to win a race. It's not your stoic a notebook training. There's so much innovation out here nowadays. There's so much of a different stage of engagement. Knocking on doors is not the same as it used to be. It's not just knocking on doors and leaving something. You're knocking on doors, you're engaging voters, you're engaging family members, they're tweeting about you, they're Facebooking about you, and you're walking down the street and about 10 people have already heard your name. We're in a different era where we can now find that candidates like a Scott Brown can go from being
unheard of
in the Senate, in the House, having led not much of anything and become U.S. Senator.
But we all agree that was an anomaly because
I think there's others that come behind him. We have a governor right now.
I think there's an opportunity for somebody.
But I also think we have to look at local races. Yes. That's where you start winning. And sure, the state house is interesting. But for most people, it's their local government. And Republicans have made real inroads
there. Case in point. We have, an Ayanna Pressley.
Last word. Hurry up.
All right. Ayanna Pressley, city councilor.
Hardly a Republican.
No, we're talking about from a Democrat, but we're just talking about candidates in general at this point. Came out clearly. Did not have the political stature. She was a political director for Kerry, but locally did not have the stature. Ran a race, very successful, came in fourth, topped the ticket the second go around. Anything, we're in a new era right now. There's a lot of change going on. I think we can make a movement.
All right, well, we're going to have to return to that.
I don't think Republicans will, though.
And maybe we'll return to that conversation after some of these persons vying for the chairmanship come to speak to Boston Public Radio about what they intend to do. But in any case, I'm happy that you all came to speak on this almost new year. Thank you so much. Marvin Vinay, Executive Director of the Black and Latino Democratic Legislative Caucus, Michael Goldman, Senior Consultant for the Government Insight Group, and Aaron O'Brien, a Professor of Political Science at UMass Boston. That wraps up another edition of Politics as Usual. Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful New Year, Kelly.
Thank you. Happy New Year
to all the listeners.
Is canned craft beer the latest buzz out of the brewing industry? What are the best winter brews of the season? Edgar B. Herrick III ushers in a happy holiday with his review of This Year in Beer. I'm Callie Crossley. You're listening to Boston Public Radio.